Good morning, South by Southwest. This is Save the Eardrums Music Earplugs and You. Today we're going to be talking about what hearing loss looks like for musicians and music lovers and what you can do to protect yourself. I'm Maddie Frick. I'm a music licensing consultant, and I'll be your moderator today. We also have Dr. Caitlin McCallick, who is an audiologist at the Chicago Public Schools, and she is wearing combat arms earplugs at South by Southwest. We also have Steven Ressner, who is Grammy Award-winning audio engineer and producer, and he is adjunct senior lecturer of audio and music engineering at the University of Rochester and PhD candidate in electrical engineering. He is wearing Westone custom earplugs at South By this year. And finally, we have Dr. Dave Anderson, who is a research scientist at Applied Research Associates, where he researches sound localization and perception, noise exposure metrics, and acoustic event detection and with machine learning. And he's also adjunct professor at the University of Denver, and he's wearing ARA brand Fires earplugs at South By Southwest. And I'm wearing Westone WM16 earplugs at South By Southwest. So we'll go through our panel, and we'll leave time at the end for any questions you may have. But first, who in the audience, please raise your hand if you're a recording musician, a producer making music. 2-3 people. And then do we have any audiologists by any chance? Nope. Okay. And so I'm assuming the rest of you are music industry people and fans who frequently go to music concerts. Yes? Cool. And then I have one more question. Would you please raise your hand if you brought earplugs to South by Southwest and are frequently wearing them? Good. That's everybody, basically. Congratulations. So let's get started. What is loud music?
Loud music. Well, loudness is subjective. So it's a combination of sound pressure level, frequency, and time of exposure. So it's a problem that we can't really measure it. There's no quantifiable measurement. We can measure sound pressure level. But loudness is something that can, your ears can change over time. So say you're exposed to a loud sound, maybe, you know, 5 minutes later, your ears adjust, and you don't think that that's a loud sound anymore, right? Or,
It's very subjective, and we can measure sound level, which is through sound level meters. You can get an app on your phone, which I highly recommend. Last night, we were at a concert, and it gives you your projected noise dose. This app I use called the NIOSH app, and the noise dose that we were exposed to within 5 minutes was 4,000% of your daily noise dose. So we're listening to some loud music here at South By.
And so you said you can't measure it, but isn't there some way to figure out?
Is there a slide you want me to show, Steve?
What?
For
loudness?
Yeah, we had a slide for loudness, right?
You might have taken it out. Yeah.
All right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so then how are we losing hearing? It's because of loud doses at concerts?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think when it comes to sound, it's important to remember that sound is a physical force. So if you imagine the force it takes to whisper versus the force it would take for Lizzo's audience members to sing, to scream at her on stage, you can kind of get an idea of that, both those different forces hitting your eardrums, and that's impactful. So over time, your ears actually, through all that pressure over time, just get worn down, basically, and causes, particularly with loud noise, causes a very specific type of hearing loss, which we can actually see. It's on Maddie, if you wouldn't mind.
Forward.
A little more. So this is the human auditory system. So when I'm talking about noise-induced hearing loss is what's called a sensory neural hearing loss that affects the cochlea, which is that snail-like structure there, or the and/or the vestibular cochlear nerve, which is the eighth cranial nerve you can see there. And so noise-induced hearing loss, like I said, is a sensory neural hearing loss, which is a permanent hearing loss that affects that inner ear. And if you go to the next slide, Maddie. So my fiance is a musician, and his audiogram there is on the left. Steve's audiogram is on the right.
I feel very exposed right now.
So an audiogram is how audiologists measure your hearing thresholds at particular pitches or frequencies. So to kind of orient you really quickly, I'll stop talking soon, is you have the, on the x-axis, you go from low pitches to high pitches, like a piano, and then as you move down the graph, you get louder. So, and then right and left ears are coded. The blue is the left ear, red is the right ear. So if I want you to bring your attention to the 3 and 4,000 hertz area where you see that dip. So Steve and my fiance actually have very similar hearing losses, and that's called a noise notch because musicians, when they're exposed to noise, it creates this classic notch in their hearing. And what's really bad about this type of hearing loss is that that primarily affects the speech area of your hearing. So you actually lose speech understanding, you lose reliability for localization, you lose ability to hear in noise. And you also can't hear as well. And you, as musicians, rely on your ears to be able to produce music and play music. So,
yeah, I'd like to just talk, a little bit about my experience. So you can see my audiogram there on the right. That was taken in 2020. About every 2 to 3 years, I get an audiogram. I go to my audiologist. I have a very good one that I trust. And what I've noticed, or what has happened since I first started really wearing custom earplugs when I was 18. I'm now 40. And most of my hearing loss was done before that, before I was 18. I'm a drummer. I've been in punk bands my whole life, playing in basement shows for years and years and years from ages, 12 to 18, was most of that hearing loss. And it's been pretty stable since. But now that I'm getting older, when I'm not, I have noticed that in loud bars and things like that, I have to kind of pay attention a little bit more to people speaking. It doesn't really affect my producing and engineering work. I compensate for that loss and that notch. And so it's not like my records end up with a huge 4K boost, or anything like that. But I'm aware of it. And I think it's healthy to be aware of where your hearing loss is so that then you can make informed decisions if you are an engineer or a producer or a musician.
So very basic question, does hearing come back?
No. The sad thing about this type of hearing loss is it's almost completely avoidable, but it's entirely permanent.
So you said you started wearing earplugs or customs when you were 18?
Yes.
So what age should we be wearing earplugs? What about children? What about dogs? Everyone? There's live people.
No, everyone should wear hearing protection as often as you're comfortable. I think using the sound level meters that we were talking about can give you an idea of when you're exposed to sound that's too loud. So concerts, different venues. Children are at particular risk because the force of sound actually affects their ears in a different way because their ear canals are smaller. You see adorable babies wearing those big headphones. Those are really good for kids. I looked it up. There is actually audiologists who specialize with working with animals. I am not one of them, but dogs can get hearing loss if exposed to loud noise. So dogs should not necessarily be going to loud concerts. But yeah, even if you have a hearing loss, like Steve was saying, you should be wearing hearing protection. Even if I have patients who have severe hearing loss, you can see as you drop down, they're very, very deeply in that profound range, that I say wear hearing protection. Protect what you have. You can never go wrong with that.
So when do I know to wear earplugs? Like how do you know what situations should you wear them in?
I live in Rochester, New York, and so that's not a terribly loud place. I've already said I'm a musician and engineer and all that fun stuff, but I lived in New York City for a long time, and the subway. I mean, I used to wear my hearing protection on the subway because it was the screeching brakes of the subway car coming down the platform was awful and very loud. So it depends on your environment, too. If you're regularly around loud noise that's not just band practice or going to concerts or producing music, carrying around your earplugs, it should be the, you know, phone, wallet, keys, earplugs check. That should be your check every time you leave the house.
Yeah, I'm always surprised ever since I got into this research field just how much noise exposure we're subjected to on a daily basis. I mean, based on the NIOSH requirements for your daily dose of sound, you can meet that really easily just in urban environments. And it's kind of scary, actually. At work, I do a lot of tests using loud sound, and I have way above my daily dose of NIOSH sound exposure just from doing my tests at work that are, you know, at 90 dB. So one thing that I wanted to, yeah, this is a good time to talk about the, we have, let me put that slide back in. I like that slide.
Okay. We're going to add a slide back in.
I will briefly say that there is kind of a balancing act between wearing too much hearing protection and not wearing enough. So your ears actually get accustomed to, if you say, for instance, if you wear hearing protection all the time, so you go out and you live in a loud area like New York, and you say, I'm just going to wear my earplugs all the time, your brain actually compensates for that. So if you wear them every day, you suddenly take them out, and it's way too loud. So do not recommend wearing hearing protection every day. Then you'll become too sensitive, and your brain will overcompensate. So you do have to kind of find what is loud, based on, like I said, sound level meters on your phones will help you figure that out. But don't wear them for everyday use, certainly.
Yeah. So when we talk about what is loud, what do you need to actually protect your ears against? There are some general guidelines or things that we think about, just like it's based on the exposure in dB over time. I have kind of some levels there that I've shown, which are, you know, in general, at a very basic level, you could think of these to be something that's helpful. Like 0 dB is defined as sort of the human threshold of hearing. It's pretty hard to hear 0 dB unless you're in a very anechoic chamber. That's 20 micropascals of pressure in air, pressure deviation in air, if anyone's interested. So then you don't really hear much else. Everything is like 30 dB might be like a very gentle whisper, like Sufjan Stevens is over on the other side of the room, and he's singing a song like this, and that's maybe 30 dB. 60 dB is like a conversation that you might be having with someone. 70 dB, city street. Then once you start getting into like the 90, 100 dB level, that's like, you know, lawnmower, jackhammer, factory equipment, that's where things start getting loud. Concerts, like if you're in a club and there's not a lot of sound reinforcement, you might be at 90 to 100. If the sound reinforcement is blasting, you might be up at 110 or even higher. Like, wasn't the loudest concert ever held at the House of Guitars in Rochester, New York?
I don't know if that's true or not. It might be a myth or a legend, but...
And I think they measured something like 130-something dB,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty brutally loud. So that's the level of a jet taking off. Now, see, when we say, oh, yeah, level of a jet taking off from 200 feet, when you double your distance from a sound source, you, in general, decrease the volume by 6 dB every time you double the distance. So you have to take that in mind, too.
What?
And not in a closed space, though.
Yeah, in free space, too.
In free space.
Sorry, yeah. We're acoustics people. 140 dB is the threshold of pain. That's probably louder than you could expect to ever experience, unless you're... I mean, gunshots get up to well above that. Mm-hmm. So,
like a blast, like at a firework, the ending where they do those loud booms at the end, what
Yeah, so the question was about fireworks. Go ahead. Sorry, Matt.
I don't know. I haven't had my sound level meter out when doing those. I would think...
The big ones at the end where sometimes it does hurt.
It's okay.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. We should actually maybe try and measure that sometime. Bring a sound level meter out there and measure. Sorry, could you hold questions till the end? Maybe we also need to ask people to speak them into the mic so that they get actually recorded for the recording later.
Yeah.
Although we could do questions throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Can you just let me? I'll just finish up my thought. Yeah.
Yeah, just really quick. So musicians aren't the only ones exposed to loud noise. We think of our military warfighters and also construction workers, you know, factory workers. So there are actually standards for workers being exposed to loud noise regularly. So there's specific time limits to how long people can be exposed to noise. So at 90 dB, I think we started in, I want to say, about 20 minutes. And then every additional 5 dB, we go half. So 95 dB would be 10 minutes. 100 dB would be 5 minutes. And so there are specific times that people are allowed to be in noisy environments. And that's why they're dependent, a lot of these workers, on wearing hearing protection properly.
Yeah, so that the question about the fireworks is actually a really interesting, good question, because in a lot of the hearing loss standards, like NIOSH standards, we think about the level of music over time, which isn't necessarily, or the level of noise exposure over time, which isn't necessarily a constant. So a lot of my research involves signals that are non-constant over time. So you can see in the bottom right there on the slide, that's a graph of two signals. The orange signal is what we would call a Gaussian distributed white noise signal, which means that it has a it's a probability distribution without a lot of outliers. It just sounds like white noise. It has a certain power level or noise exposure level. The blue signal there has the same power level, so overall loudness over time, what we would call RMS level. The peaks, though, are much higher. And so those two signals, based on the hearing loss standards, would be treated the same. But the signal with more peaks in it has actually been shown in research to cause more hearing damage. And so there's a lot of research going on, mine included right now, in trying to evaluate the difference between signals that change over time in terms of peaks of loudness versus signals that have constant loudness over time, and what the impact is on both what sort of hearing protection you should wear for those signals and how much hearing damage they cause. And so music, too, unless it's super, super compressed music, usually is not a constant level over time. And, like, I can just say from personal experience, last night I was at a concert where the level was pretty low. It was at a club. And then all of a sudden it got really, really loud when someone just screamed into the microphone. And so, you know, things are not constant over time. And that, like, if you are mostly listening to 90 dB music at a club, you're fine for 20 minutes, right? But then if someone screams into the microphone and you get hit with 115 dB, it's like, ah, no. You know, that's a lot more painful. So, those sudden spikes actually cause more hearing damage because your ear is not prepared for those. It hasn't yet, like, prepared itself for those really high levels of sound.
And if you've ever, this is another good audience involvement question, has anyone ever gone to a concert and left and felt like their hearing had changed? Yeah. So that's something that's the precursor to noise-induced hearing loss called temporary threshold shift. So usually when that happens, you'll walk out of a club and suddenly you're like, oh my gosh, I should have had my hearing protection. And you know, you might have ringing in your ears. You might feel like everything's really muffled, or you know, those low frequencies are really getting to your head. And then the next day you're like, oh, my ears are back, we're good, you know, you're not. That's a precursor to noise-induced hearing loss, and noise damage is actually additive over time. So if you think of drops in a bucket, you know, I went to one concert last night, and if I go to another concert tonight, that is continuing to add. It's not like my ears completely go back to it the way they were. So a lot of us, I like to say damage to your ears occurs long before damage to your hearing. So you're not actually going to notice necessarily the damage to your ears before you notice the change in your hearing. So a lot of us could go to an audiologist today and say, I want a hearing test. And she'll tell you, okay, great, you have normal hearing. It doesn't mean you don't have noise damage. It just means it isn't bad enough yet. So noise damage is additive over time, and I think that's really important for everyone to remember.
So I think we can all agree that we should be wearing earplugs when we're out at shows. So what can we do to protect our hearing to do that?
What kinds of protection can we be doing
to protect our hearing?
Oh, yeah, like what? So what kind of hearing protection devices are available?
What can I do to save my ears?
Yeah. Okay, so, wear earplugs. So I...
Share your research.
Yeah. So there's all different kinds of earplugs that exist out there. We, in fact, have a variety of earplugs here with us. Kaylin has the 3M earplugs.
I don't have them with me. Foam earplugs, which anything is better than nothing. I have my phone earplugs today, but my Combat Arms ones are actually military grade hearing protection. But they're like flanges in your ears, so they fit a little bit more comfortably. If anyone's had uncomfortable experiences with foam plugs before, which by the way, if you put foam plugs in, they should be all the way in your ear canal so that just a little piece of the foam plug is sticking out. Should be kind of flush with the ear canal. That's how deep they should go. But no, I do not have mine.
Yeah. There are foam earplugs. Does anybody here wear foam earplugs at concerts? Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, that's an option for sure. Steve uses custom bass tone earplugs.
So these are molded to my ear. This is my second pair since I was 18. So as long as you don't lose them, they can last a long time. These pads, so they're red and blue for right and left ear, but they're 15 dB pads, so they just take everything and turn it down 15 dB. I can hear everything clearly. It's not like it's muffled with foam earplugs. But then my audiologist, every couple years, we actually test with these in to see if the seal is broken. Kaylin was talking about make sure that there's a good seal. That works. That's the same for custom earplugs. These are just kind of molded silicone, and that can become brittle over time. And if the seal is broken and a lot of leakage is coming through, then I have to order new earplugs. So it's not something that's going to last a whole lifetime, but you know, my first pair was 10, 15 years it lasted me, and then I got a new pair. So.
And I'm using earplugs that were developed by my company, ARA, for first responders, I guess. These are meant to have a flat insertion loss as well. They're not custom, but they do work fairly well. And so I want to share some results from my lab in testing earplugs.
Yeah, we should play the audio
and see if I can get to them.
And I just like to say I'm a regular consumer. I don't have special access to any fancy earplugs like scientists who may work on them. I'm using the Westone WM16s, which I got off Amazon because Dave told me they were the best ones in his opinion as of today for what I was gonna do. They were a little bit more pricey. I usually buy like a $20 earplug. These ones were about $40 on Amazon, and I feel pretty good with them.
I want to give some context to what Dave's about to explain and what we've talked about so far. When we talk about flat insertion loss, so if you remember the graphs I showed you earlier of that audiogram, that hearing test, so those are the general frequencies of speech. And a lot of, like, the foam plugs, if you've, people who said that they wear them to concerts, if you try talking with those, you're going to get something called the occlusion effect, which is a lot of low-frequency, low-pitch noise. Suddenly, you're feeling like you're talking in a barrel, that kind of thing. It's not something you want when you're playing music, right? Or you're listening, or you're producing music like Steve does. So that's why, for musicians, I always recommend the custom plugs because, and apparently Dave's too, they just do a flat insertion last meeting. They take all the audible pitches and they just turn the volume down. So Steve has some that go 15 dB down. So he's still able to hear all those speech, all those frequencies, all those pitches that he needs to hear, and he's still able to talk. But he is getting just, it's like turning the volume down instead of this wonky graph we're about to see.
Yeah, so these graphs are measurements in the lab of the insertion loss of earplugs in a mannequin test fixture. These are not actually in people's ears. So this gives you a rough idea of what frequencies are lost and at what level by using earplugs. And so this is a pair of foam earplugs. The level zero up at the very top would be 0 decibels of insertion loss, which means nothing is lost. Every like, you know, any deviation from zero is, you know, frequency content that is lost. These foam earplugs, you can see, pretty much there's 60 dB of insertion loss. That means that the level basically across the board, except at very low frequencies there on the left where it's 40 dB, that's 60 dB is 1/1000th of the original pressure level. We hear every doubling of loudness in human perception is about 9 to 10 dB is the rule of thumb that we use. So that's six halvings of the, I don't know if that's a word, of the loudness. So let's see, 2^6 power is what, 64? So that's 1/64, is that right? Yes. So it's 1/64th of the loudness, basically. That may or may not be true. This doesn't take into account bone conduction, which at low frequencies actually drives a lot more low frequency stuff into your ears. But basically, the takeaway from this is if you want to block out everything, wear foam earplugs, because you're blocking out everything.
With good placement.
Depends
on how well you put them in your ears.
Yes, if these are shoved really far in your ears, yeah. If they're not shoved that far in your ears, it's not going to be quite this good. But I can just say from personal experience, last night I forgot my good earplugs and I had to wear some foam earplugs that I got for free at a venue, and I really couldn't hear much of anything. I could hear the bass drum and the bass guitar, and that was pretty much it. And so actually I was like doing this thing where I would yawn during the songs just so I could open up my ear canals a little bit more and hear the cymbals of the drummers. Cause I was like, oh man, I can't hear anything. Couldn't hear the vocals, couldn't hear the cymbals at all.
And I could hear it all very well.
Yeah. With your musician.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what insertion loss looks like for foam earplugs. It's a lot of insertion loss.
Do you have audio of those? Or
Oh, yeah. So we actually have some audio, some simulated audio of what you would hear. Yeah, it's here.
Okay.
So we have a track from one of Steve's bands. This is...
The original?
This is the original. Yeah, unedited. Okay, and so now simulated based on that insertion loss, what it would sound like, and just a heads up, you're not going to really hear very much.
I can hear it.
Yeah, you can hear a little bit of bass.
Yeah. Probably turn it up.
So, if you wanted to hear a little bit of bass, that's what you're going to get.
That was good. Yeah. Pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
In fact.
Yeah, it's shock value. So then there's a different type of earplugs out there that I would call pinhole earplugs. These are used a lot in, especially for firearms protection. My research is all with the military, so we do a lot of firearms protection type earplugs. Pinhole earplugs are interesting. I think these earplugs that I've shown a picture of here are a specific brand, but I'm just talking about pinhole earplugs in general. I'm not talking about this specific pair. I'm not either...
Stop promoting these earplugs.
I'm not promoting a certain brand or trying to rag on a certain brand. I'm just talking about pinhole earplugs in general here. And so what's interesting about these is there is a tiny little pinhole. Like a foam earplug is just a piece of foam that blocks sound from reaching your ears. These pinhole earplugs actually have a very tiny, maybe... a tenth of a millimeter wide pinhole leak is what we would call it, that is an acoustic channel leading from the outside of the earplug into your ear canal. And at low frequencies, that doesn't really affect the channeling of sound through the earplug at all. So what's interesting about these is that at low frequencies... Oh, and my mouse is not there. At low frequencies, which is on the very left side of this graph, you don't get any insertion loss. Everything passes through totally normally. At higher frequencies, you do get insertion loss because the pinhole starts becoming much more important at higher frequencies where wavelengths are shorter. And so these definitely sound odd when you're listening to music because... if you're trying to block energy from low frequencies, you're really not doing a very good job. A lot of these, are specifically meant for blocking the specific frequencies that you would see in firearms. So let's listen to what these would sound like. Again, here's the original track. And the filtered track based on that measured insertion loss in the lab. Yeah, so what's interesting about these is the bass is not attenuated at all. If you're listening to music like in a club with tons of bass and you're wearing these, your noise exposure is still going to be really high because it doesn't attenuate the bass at all. And then you won't be able to hear any vocals or any cymbals or anything. So while these might be recommended if you're hunting or at the shooting range or something, I wouldn't recommend these for concerts. Anything with like, if you see something advertised with like a pinhole leak, that's what these are.
And lower frequencies, bass notes are always going to travel further. So lower frequencies, lower pitches have longer wavelengths, so they're able to travel longer than high pitches. So if, just in general, generally speaking, if you think of a flute versus a tuba, you're going to hear a tuba for much longer than you would hear a flute in terms of distance. So wavelengths tend to travel further when lower pitches tend to be more audible when you're wearing hearing protection. I also think this is a good point to point out that things that are not hearing protection, in-ear monitors are not hearing protection. AirPods are not hearing protection. just about anything else that plugs up your ears is. But remember, a lot of musicians tell me, oh, I'm going to get in-ear monitors. They're going to protect my ears. They are not going to protect your ears.
So now, finally, let's look at... I said I wasn't promoting any brands. Well, there are companies that make music-specific earplugs, and Westone, Edemotic are two brands that make music-specific earplugs.
This is one pair of earplugs from Edemotic, and the insertion loss graph is shown there. This is much closer to a flat insertion loss earplug, as in we would want this to be totally, totally flat, where it attenuates all frequencies the same so that the music is not distorted in a frequency way. This one does come pretty close to doing that. So let's take a listen to what the music sounds like when it's been filtered through these earplugs. Again, the original, just for context. And I promise this is the last time. Well, actually, no, we have one more.
No.
Yeah, just one more.
Yeah. And then filtered through the earplugs. See, we're on the backside of the speakers, so we can only hear the bass.
Yeah.
yeah, you can hear all the high frequencies, and we can't. So I think all of us just had a sudden, like, oh, can't. Those don't work as well as... but you're probably hearing something that we can't hear. So these are, you know, music-specific earplugs definitely are better than foam earplugs if you actually want to hear what's going on, and especially as a musician if you're practicing with a band or something. I was in a band for a long time before I got into this field of research, and I always wore foam earplugs, and oh man, we could have maybe hit the big time if I didn't do that, because I couldn't hear anything. So I'm going to blame all of our lack of success on my foam earplugs. Yeah, so I think that's those are all the measurements that I had to present about these things, if we want to talk.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Like, so we have another slide here. We could talk about how you can take things into your own hands as a consumer, like what apps mm-hmm. we could be using. Like, how do we use these apps?
Yeah, so like I've been talking about the NIOSH app. Don't ask me what NIOSH stands for, I forget, but it is one of the standards that we use. It's NIOSH is this company, and they produce standards on noise levels, particularly in industries. So they have this app. Last time I checked, it wasn't available on Android. It was only available on iPhones, but that could have changed by now. So when you open the app, it has this, you'll see that screen there on the left side. And at the bottom, my favorite thing to look at is the projected dose. That gives you your dose for the day, so if you've had your noise dose over the day. And then there's something called the A-weighted average. That's what Dave was talking about earlier. So if you have peaks of noise, it's kind of like if you've been eating salad all week and then you have 3 pints of ice cream, it doesn't mean that you're not going to gain weight just because you've been eating ice cream. So even if you have just low-level noise and then you have a spike of 100, it doesn't mean it's not going to cause damage just because you've had, you know, you've been good with your noise dose over the week. So that's what an average is. It takes your average noise dose, including all of those peaks. And I use this app all the time, if anything, just for fun. When... you know, my fiance and I are arguing about, we're at a bar or something, and he's like, it's not too loud, I don't need my hearing protection. Yeah, you do. it's a good visual to see what you're being exposed to.
Yeah, I also use the NIOSH app, so the top one there. And I took a level, the first concert we went to when we arrived on Thursday night, Wednesday night, sorry, kind of Wednesday. I just took a general measure, and I was standing. This was an outdoor concert, and it was behind the front of house. So front of house is where the engineer stands, the mixing engineer. And it was measuring at 104.8. I took a screenshot. So not terribly loud because it was outside, but it's still enough to cause hearing damage if you are exposed to it for a long time. The app below is something that I use as an engineer as well. It's an audio spectrum analyzer, so it's just showing you the real-time analyzing of the frequency spectrum in decibels. And so that I like to open up every once in a while just because it's fun to look at. But you can see the peaks and valleys of what frequencies are actually affecting your ears as well at that time instead of just a generalized dB. And you can see the peak frequency that is giving you the peak decibel level too. A couple nights ago, I was actually at my house And I noticed that there was this weird pitchy bell wind chime kind of sound that was keeping me up. And I opened up that app and I found the pitch for that because I'm a dork. So I actually was able then to localize it in my neighborhood and ask my neighbor to take it down because it was keeping me up.
So we do have some more information that just some basics on actual hearing loss and the importance of it. We should, you know, leave here at the end to leave with you guys just to know how important it is to wear your earplugs. We also have some examples of why we really want to be protecting our hearing in the first place.
Yeah. One big motivator, I think, if you, the sad part of these graphs and this these last bits of information we have for you is that, you know, I'm an audiologist. I treat people who have hearing loss. And when people come to me and I have to tell them they have hearing loss, it's really hard because with sensory neural hearing loss, with noise-induced hearing loss, you can't change it. You can't reverse it. There's no going back. And the reality is that if it gets to the point that you have a hearing loss that's bad enough to have hearing aids, I love hearing aids. I think they're amazing. They're the coolest pieces of technology, but they're nowhere near as amazing as a healthy auditory system. So musicians come to me and they hate hearing aids, especially engineers. He's going to be the worst patient to deal with. But, you know, there's no way to make it sound like you're used to. So keep what you have.
Do we want to talk about what's...
Yeah, so this is a statistics chart. We did not take these, general surveys, I guess. These were pulled from Statista.org. There was a survey taken a couple of years ago. And generally just showing this chart where hearing loss is going to get worse because we aren't protecting our ears as much, and we're all wearing AirPods and in-ear monitors and things like that. And another thing that kind of occurred to me while looking at this graph last week was that as humans, we haven't been exposed to loud sounds like this for very long. Modern sound reinforcement systems came around in the 1960s. So really, before that, humans weren't subjected to 120 decibels rarely, like really at all. And now it's almost a weekly thing, depending how often you go to concerts or if you live somewhere where there's a loud noise environment. So hearing loss is projected to get worse in more percentage of the population over time.
And if this isn't humbling enough, hearing loss has been shown, people with hearing loss, I think the average loss of income for someone with hearing loss compared to someone who has normal hearing is about $2 million over the course of a lifetime. So if noise damage isn't enough, think about money.
Yeah. This was part of the same survey where they just asked, how often do you wear hearing protection? You can see it's pretty pretty stark there. And then this is based on age. Younger people seem to be wearing hearing protection a little bit more frequently. That's probably because I'm yelling at my students all the time, telling them to go to audiologists. And some of them heed my advice, some of them don't. But I think there's better education around it now. I think things like Apple, and I'm not sure if Android phones do it, but they monitor your noise exposure level, at least listening to music through your AirPods. So don't turn that off. Do not turn off the noise exposure alert. You can ignore it, but... just have it go off so that it keeps you in mind of how much music and how loud you're listening to it on your headphones.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's why I took the slide out. But,
yeah. Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have, we also have the same song that we were using to simulate the earplugs. We filtered it through what would be essentially an audiogram of someone with hearing loss.
Noise-induced hearing loss.
So that you can, music noise-induced hearing loss, right? Not like industrial. So we want to play this for you as well. So here's the original track again.
It's a good song.
We always miss the payoff. No chorus. Here it comes. Oh, damn it.
And here's the hearing loss.
So, Kaylin, can you explain what's lost in that second track?
Yeah. So, like I said, that noise notch happens usually around 3 or 4 thousand hertz, and again, those are really important speech frequencies. So, a lot of speech information is held within those pitches. Our ears have been evolutionarily tuned to 3,500 hertz to give us a boost at those frequencies. So, the difference isn't super stark in these comparisons, but we are actually, it's losing over time. You realize you're losing a lot of that clarity of the song. A lot of the speech clarity occurs within those speech frequencies. And even if you don't hear it in music, you'd hear it in conversation, you'd hear it in noise. So if this was a bar and there was other things going on, you would lose a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's all we've come prepared with. It's we'll take some questions, and we do ask that you use the microphone when you do that, and please share your name and your question.
Hmm.
Hello.
Hello. I'm Dave. I would love to revisit this the conversation about in-ear monitors.
Yeah.
I know you said that they don't protect your hearing. I found the opposite to be true, with a huge asterisk of so long as you don't turn them up as loud as they would, as the sound would be if they weren't, because they do tend to, like the acrylic molds themselves do tend to block about like 25 dB or something. And so I just wanted to make sure that like I wasn't misunderstanding.
Sure.
Yeah.
So certainly something in your ears, you know, like custom in-ear monitors will block out sound. You're absolutely correct. The difference that you need to keep in mind is that in-ear monitors, the purpose of them is not noise reduction necessarily. So hearing protection devices come with something called the noise reduction rating, or the NRR. So in essence, what Dave was explaining is we test the NRR. So devices that are made for hearing protection will come with a rating.
Got
so
it.
They in-ear monitors haven't been tested industrially for something like that. So I can't. You, for instance, if you get hearing loss from wearing in-ear monitors, you can't go and sue the company.
Sure.
But you told me this. So
yeah.
They do offer something, and certainly the benefit of wearing in-ear monitors for musicians is that you don't have to turn those wedges up as loud,
yeah,
right?
Well, and you're not turning a wedge up over an earplug.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I won't say that they're not helpful. They're certainly better than nothing, but you also can't rely on them to protect your hearing.
Hey, that's your finger on the volume knob.
Yeah. Yeah, just turn it. Make sure you're turning it down. Yeah, absolutely.
I think too. There's a lot of this is based on like legal protections for people.
Yeah.
And I think, from a strict like legal standpoint, because there are lawsuits against a lot of companies right now for hearing protection. It's like in-ear monitors. Like yes, you can shove something in your ear. They're not strictly hearing protection from a legal standpoint because they're just not rated for that. It's like
CYA.
Yeah, exactly. But they'll definitely keep sound from reaching your ears. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Balo. I'm an artist, a producer, and a DJ. First, I had a question in the presentation. Like, do bass levels affect the loudness meter? Like, does the pain threshold go down, because we do tend to like feel and hear more the lower frequencies?
Yes. Sometimes I have to think about how I want to answer questions. Yeah. So bass levels are those low pitches, right? So they travel further. So you hear, you perceive them as louder subjectively. You perceive them as louder. So you'll pick up bass notes more than you'll pick up the high pitches of the vocals as much. To answer your question about if what was your second part of the question?
I think it was 140 dB, like the threshold of pain. Like, does it lower us when you have like more bass level?
Yeah, you jump in, please.
Yeah, so this is actually sort of taken into account in what we call A-weighted noise. A-weighted noise is not, like if we were thinking about noise at 140 dB, let's say that's a big level, A-weighted sort of weights the noise to the human
thresholds of hearing at different frequencies, we're actually less sensitive to bass just based on our ears. Bone conduction is something different, but I'm just going to forget that bone conduction exists for right now because it's not normally taken into account in what we would call like the Fletcher-Munson curves, which are the human sensitivity.
Yeah. You mentioned Fletcher-Munson.
Yeah, every acoustics patient has to mention Fletcher-Munson curves. And so, yes, you are sensitive to different frequencies at different sensitivity levels, for sure. We're actually less sensitive to bass, for sure. If you want to create the same perceptual level of volume at bass, it has to be louder than, say, something at 2.5K or 3K, which is where our ears are most sensitive. So, yes, but that's taken into account with the A weighting, which is what the NIOSH app actually rates. So if you don't do A weighting, then no. But if you do A weighting, it's taken into account.
Okay, yeah. And I've never used, like, earplugs. Like, I want to, like, start using them. Like, yeah. As a DJ, you usually, like, have the levels on your headphones, like, high because mm-hmm. you start, like the outer monitors, you start turning them on. Like louder, and then the headphones go louder. Like, which earplugs should I have? Like, more like the musician ones, or do they feel like comfortable with headphones and all that?
Yeah. So, for years, I played in bands that couldn't afford in-ear monitor systems, and so I had to play along with a click track. And so I had my musician's earplugs and then headphones over top in a live sound setting, and it worked to some degree. I think that could work for you. But again, keep in mind that musicians' earplugs, the filters are usually like 15 dB, 25 dB, and 10 dB. I don't think they really offer much else. So 15 dB, if you're listening really loud, at say it's 120, it's not like you're just down to 105, which really isn't much. Your time of exposure, you can be there a little bit longer, you can listen a little bit longer, but if you're still DJing for like 4 hours at a big, you know, rave or whatever, that might be an issue. You'll still be incurring some hearing loss. I would go with a 25 dB pad or something like that.
And a lot of these things are a little technical, so I understand it's a little overwhelming. I would definitely recommend every insurance company has to approve of one hearing test a year, mm-hmm. more if you have a change in hearing. So if you have any questions about that, certainly go and get your hearing tested, and an audiologist should be able to answer those questions. And if he or she can't, say, please go check for me and call me back.
I'd just like to add one more thing. It'd be a good, it's a good idea to find an audiologist that works with musicians,
yeah.
not one that works with people with just general hearing loss or need hearing aids. So if you find an audiologist in your neighborhood that works with musicians, that's your best bet.
Hello. Thanks, you guys, for spreading the science and gospel on this stuff. It's fantastic. I have a hearing loss journey that started about 3 years ago, but a relationship with hearing protection that goes back to since I was 16. I won't say how many years that is. But I'm James. I'm one of the founders of EnterGain. We're the executive recruiting firm for the music industry. Prior to my career as an executive recruiter and HR leader that started 20 years ago, I was a professional drummer and recording engineer. And I learned at an early age, I wanted to protect my ears. I got good advice and got into the, you know, geeked on the science of it. Got a SPL meter at the time. Sitting at my drum kit, big old Premier Resonator die-cast rims vintage kit, it's like 105, 110 dB, right? Mm-hmm. So as a teenager, I realized, well, these musicians, hearing protection at, like you said, 15 dB, forget about it. Mm-hmm. Waste of time. Mm-hmm. So I just got myself used to foam earplugs, mm-hmm. right? And just put up with it and say, and as a musician and as a recording engineer, it when I finally made that commitment as a teenager, it probably took me a good 6 months for my head to translate what's really happening when I'm hearing that. But, and friends would tease you, this was decades ago. So friends, colleagues, musicians would tease you, what, you don't like my music? No, I love your music. Mm-hmm. I always want to be able to hear it right. And so that was my platform. About 3.5 years ago, I had a sudden sensorineural hearing loss that they, you know, probably attribute to an infection in my left ear. My left ear sounds a lot like that first recording you queued up of that. That it was just all bass, right? The one with like the pinhole, and it's just bass. You can't understand speech or anything. So I've been on, but when I first went to the audiologist after that occurred, and the ear doctor, they're like, you were a musician professionally, you're a drummer and a musician and a live sound, like, go back to the audiologist down the hall. This is a mistake. Your right ear is perfect. Your right ear is perfect. So I say that story to all of you guys to say, protect your ears. Protect your ears, because then she said, oh my God, this is your right ear. You're in your 50s and your right ear is perfect. And if it was not, she said, if you had just normal age related, let alone musician related hearing loss in your right ear, because my left ear loss is so severe, she's like, I don't know what we'd do with you. Your life would be miserable. You'd have to have a hearing aid all the time. You'd lose your, I've kind of lost most of my stereo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so I just kind of say that as a message to everybody. Listen to these guys, and 15 dB is not enough. I would take that muddy, flat 30, 40 dB foam earplugs any day of the week. As I play as a, you know, for fun now, not professionally, but semi-professionally for fun, drums and bands, I might put in plugs or have ear, like musician ear pods turned way down low, and then like the 30 dB hearing protection you buy at Home Depot for cutting the grass over top of it, so I can minimize the amount of monitor that goes in my ear.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Look like a total dad, but whatever.
But you can hear.
I am a dad, and I can hear, and I can hear the music great. I'm right there in cue. You can run a click through it. It's fine, right? So I wanted to just share that. The other thing I want to share, agreed, that these things, a company called Nuheara, N-U-H-E-A-R-A, Nuheara, Australian company, these are designed for people with mild hearing loss who want to hear better in noisy environments. So they combine sound noise cancellation and like narrow amplification in front of you. And I've kind of played with all the settings in the app it comes with. And it's life-changing, because since this happened, if I just put in foam earplugs and go to a show, it just doesn't sound good. But if I put these in, maximize the noise reduction, and then just dial in a couple dB of environment, I'm getting what I estimate to be probably about a 30 dB reduction, but a flat response. Mm-hmm. But again, big caution, these have not been rated as hearing protection, to your point earlier. They're not. And the company would never say that. I would never say that. But I personally find them to be really effective in my situation. Last point, and I'm sorry, I don't have a question. But I've just been on this journey obsessing over this for 3 years. There's two companies to watch that are working on regrowth of the hair cells in the inner ear, Frequency Therapeutics and Decibel Therapeutics. Look them both up. Watch them, because they're both running clinical trials right now. So if you do have hearing loss, follow those companies. If you're brave, and you would do, my brother is a retired pharma exec. He's like, don't do a clinical trial. I'm like, I don't know. But anyway, I'm tempted. Decibel Therapeutics, Frequency Therapeutics, both doing clinical trials that'll turn this stuff around, is what their investors are hoping anyway. But don't go blow your ears up thinking that's coming. That'd be the stupidest thing in the world. Unless you like your doctor putting needles in your ears, which is what I've had done. I should say needles in this ear. Anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm just a fan, go to a lot of concerts. I had pinhole kind, which actually I thought was had it recommended as a music by a music expert more than I, national. You've heard of them. Anyway, thought they would be good. They ended up in my pocket, except for, you know, rare cases where you could see that it was painful and I would drag them out. But they sounded, made music sound awful. And they also don't fit that great, you know. And so I in my 50s, switched to got what they call musicians molded, you know, custom molded earplugs, mm-hmm. which they shouldn't be called musicians. They should be called fans or people yeah. that everybody yes. that loves music want to really actually agree. Hear what the music sounds like. And they're actually a joy to put in, even at lower levels. You know, you can hear things better. They're very good. Mm-hmm. And so I just wish that term would go away. And
we can rebrand. We'll try.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can start today.
I like
yeah.
it.
Anyway, I think that's great, and I had a question, but I lost it. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
If you remember it afterwards, yeah, you can come talk to us.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, I'm Cindy Cohn, and I am a retired rock guitarist. I was in bands. I'm 60 years old now. I was in bands in the 70s and 80s. I guess they were the pinhole kind. I honestly didn't know what they were called, but my guitar teacher, my mother, everybody told me to wear them. The adult size was too small. I mean, I'm small now. The adult size didn't fit, and then the children's size kept popping out. It was like you put it in, and like you're playing, and it would pop out. They didn't fit, and your ear would have like pain after you took them out. And plus, I'm born with a eustachian tube dysfunction, which makes you get pressure change problems yeah. and ear popping to begin with. So needless to say, they stayed in my guitar case. Never wore them. I have the foam ones, and you're right, you don't hear anything, so I stopped wearing those. I guess the question is, I know now, I didn't know then, that you could get the custom ones. I don't know if that's still, I mean, back then in the 70s and 80s, I don't know if you could have gotten them then, but nobody told me. So my question is, if I got the custom ones now, and I basically don't have much hearing loss. I mean, I've been tested, and they didn't find any now at my age. Is something from the past going to, like, catch up with me? Or is it where I am now, you could test it, and that's where I'm at a baseline? Or will I find out now in the future that things from the past are catching up?
Such a good question. So standard audiograms, the tests that I showed you, is usually if you go to an audiologist, say, I need a hearing test, that's what she's going to do. She's going to test your hearing, and she's going to get this result and do some speech testing where you have to repeat words and things like that. What we understand about this is that this is generally what you can hear. So what you can say, oh, yes, I heard that. You know, you hear the beep, press the button, raise your hand, whatever. Like I said, if your audiologist, he or she is telling you, no, you don't have a hearing loss, there is a wide range of normal. So negative 10 to 25 dB is considered within the normal range. So say, for instance, you were born where your thresholds were negative 10 dB across the board. And now in your 60s, you've dropped to 25 dB. You'd still have normal hearing, but that doesn't mean you haven't had noise damage, right? So you started off negative 10, now you're at 25, you're still within the normal range, but you've had damage. So that's part of the answer to your question. The other part is something that we know in the field that's not a standard test necessarily for a hearing test, is something called otoacoustic emissions testing. And that actually tests the responses of those inner hair cells to noise. And those are the cells that, once they're gone, start to affect. That's what noise damage is affecting, is those hair cells. So we can't necessarily see with high fidelity if there's noise damage to the hair cells on these tests. On otoacoustic emissions testing, we can start to see that. So often I'll have musicians coming in that have normal hearing like yourself, and then I'll do a test on the otoacoustic emissions and start to see that notch. So that notch appears on that test before it'll appear on this test. So start protecting your ears now, even though you said you're not performing still. Get custom plugs. They're fan plugs, right? They're for anyone who's going to concerts or for anyone who's exposed to noise. So particularly if you have smaller ear canals, if you have strained ear canals, eustachian tube dysfunction, these are going to be much more comfortable for you.
And I think that's all the time we have. So thank you so much for coming. We'll stick around if anyone wants to talk to us after.